Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin and helping you maneuver through this modern dystopia, it's episode number 90 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag takes a deeper look at the Pac-12's football schedule. At 12:30, baseball continues slogging its way through a strange season. And in mere minutes, we wait as the Big 12 decides what to do with its football season. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
Ah, you damn right. Welcome to the first full week of August, and the Big 12 knows the truth about football. It's more exciting on Monday night. That's when you want to go prime time. That's when you want to let everybody know. We will talk about the Big 12 and what they may or may not do tonight. We will talk Texas football. If you're a Longhorn fan, if you love to go to DKR, if you're a season ticket holder, if you love to tailgate, new guidelines and protocols and ideas have been thrown out by the University of Texas. By thrown out, I don't mean gotten rid of. I mean they have presented them to the fan base, and we will definitely get into that. There's a lot of different college football angles, whether it's the Pac-12 scheduling, which I'll get into a little more in the crap bag, and what I think that can tell us about other conferences, but also this Pac-12 player letter that was sent out to the NCAA. There's a lot of different things to get into, and thankfully there are actually some sports to talk about, whether it's baseball, basketball, or whatever. Before we jump right in, Trey, I do need you to help me with one little detail of my life and make sure I'm not being too much of a freak, but before that...
You are.
I probably am, but before that, how was your weekend? Anything interesting to report?
Weekend was a lot of Mr. Momming it. Justine had to work both Saturday and Sunday, so I got to hang out with the kids a lot. And if there was one thing that was maybe a little bit different, it's that on Saturday the kids were clamoring to watch Star Wars, Chad.
All right.
Which I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan necessarily, but I respect it as one of the all-time classics. So I decided to sit down with them and watch the first 40 minutes or so of Star Wars yesterday. Now,
are we talking Star Wars 1977, New Hope, Star Wars?
Yeah, Star Wars.
Okay.
Just making sure. Not Empire Strikes Back.
Making sure.
Not Return of the Jedi.
Just making sure you didn't start him with episode one. I was going to call CPS. Go ahead.
Now, I thought about it, actually.
No, you shouldn't have.
Well, that's why I ultimately did not.
If you exposed your children to Jar Jar Binks over the weekend, I was going to have to call CPS.
That's literally one of the worst movies I've ever watched in the theater. I forget if I walked out on that one or not, but it was that bad to where I was ready to do so.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And I think I fell asleep at one point in the middle of it, too. It was that bad.
But it was bad.
We went with the original Star Wars,
excellent,
the 1977 Star Wars. I guess the question I have for you and maybe the people out there is, are they a little bit too young to be watching this movie at 5 and 3? Because even though it's PG and it doesn't have any language and really the violence is minimal, it does have some scary parts in it.
I would say that a 5 and 3 year old are not quite ready for Star Wars for multiple reasons, but the main one is they're just not, a 3 year old can't follow this movie.
Impossible to follow. And I realized that through the first 40 minutes. And so I turned it off after 40 minutes because TV time for the post-nap thing that we normally do, we were at our limit there. The 5-year-old, my daughter, doesn't want any part of watching that movie going forward.
Really?
She claimed to have nightmares last night about it, which I don't necessarily buy. She's a little bit histrionic about those things sometimes.
Darth Vader?
Because of Darth Vader, yeah.
Yeah.
No, not even Darth Vader. Because of the sand people.
Oh, the sand people were a little freaky when I was a kid.
Sand people?
Yeah.
And I'll admit, looking at the sand people, I was like, oh, I can see how this might actually mess with her a little bit later.
Yeah, that's a scary group.
But the 3-year-old, the one who did require an explanation for everything, and even still he wasn't getting it, he's ready to watch the rest of the movie and continue on through the series.
Okay. So you got a 3-year-old that's ready to dive in. I like it.
He's ready to dive in. He's calling himself Luke Skywalker this morning.
That's
although he can't
awesome.
Really can't really say his R's. or his L's, so it comes across as something a little bit different. But yes, he considers himself to be Luke right now.
That is fantastic. All right.
Wook, as he would say.
Wook. I am glad that at least one of your kids is getting into Star Wars, and she may get there. She may get there at one point. My question to you kind of involves kids as well, because we have my niece and nephew that are visiting for the week, give my brother-in-law and sister-in-law a little time away from, you know, a little time to themselves to take a breath.
Your niece at A&M?
No. My niece who's 10.
Okay.
And so the nephew is right at my kid's age. He's, you know, a little older than mine.
Gotcha.
13, and then she's 10. So anyway, and they all get along really well. So they're coming into town, and my wife and I have been looking for our lost pool key for months.
Oh, the key that gets you into the neighborhood pool?
Correct. So it didn't matter because of COVID, because we didn't want to go at first, but then now we're thinking, oh, you know, it might be a good idea. It's 102 every day. Maybe they want to go to the pool. So we had been looking for it, having the conversation, and she says, let's just get the replacement. I was like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, do you know how much it is? She goes, I think it's like $20, $25. I'm like, man, that just seems a little steep for
me. Is it
me.
A key card or an actual physical key?
Key card.
Yeah.
So it's a key card that you scan to get, yeah. So we're looking, and over the weekend, we look at all these different places in the house we were thinking of. Well, recently, we realized, okay, let's just go ahead and let's just do it. Let's eat the situation, and, you know, because we got the niece and nephew coming in. So my wife sends the email. Hey, blah, 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 blah. Is the replacement fee still $25? I think is what she sent back.
Mm-hmm.
$75.
What? That's BS, dude.
So I'm just making sure I'm not flipping out too much, because my wife and I have clearly drawn a line in the sand that we are not paying $75 to get a replacement pool key.
Somebody is trying to use their position of power in the neighborhood association to line their own pockets.
I was like,
there is no way that costs $75.
I know. And she said yesterday, like, they probably just have these laying around, right? When somebody moves into a house, they
exactly. Just
hand them out. So anyway, we're standing firm. So this afternoon, I'm going to be looking all over the garage again, trying to figure out where is this stinking pool key. But I got to be that guy, because there's certain things in the world I can't pay $75 for, and that is one of them. Right,
you know,
now. I don't get it.
You guys pay neighborhood dues, right?
Yeah, there's an HOA, and we pay the dues and all that stuff. Like, at this point, do I need to be filing some protest of, like, $75? Because she just sent an email back saying, wow, okay, well, that is way too much money. We'll just try to find the one we lost, I guess, because we're not paying that. Like, she sent the email back.
She said that.
Yeah.
Did they respond to her?
I don't believe so.
Was it one person?
I'm not sure. I'd have to go double check if it was one person or a committee of folk.
Honestly, if I'm you guys and you can't find the key and tearing the house apart again today, I would go back to them and say, look, I don't know what happened between when this thing cost $25 and when it cost $75, but let's get real here. We pay HOA fees for a reason. Yes, you guys do a great job of keeping the lawns mowed and whatever else goes into the HOA fees, keeping the pool clean during the summertime. It does not cost $75 to replace one of these key cards, period.
Yeah.
And I need you to make this right by charging us $25 for the replacement.
That's good. I sound like you need to be our rep. I'm going to make you our rep in this situation.
Dude, I love handling these things.
Yeah, that's good.
It takes everything in my power, Chad, because I'm sure your neighborhood has one of these neighborhood Facebook pages now.
It takes everything
in my power not to chime in with some of the bored, clucking hens who love creating drama in our neighborhood over the stupidest little things. It takes everything in my power not to respond to some of these people.
So I appreciate you helping me clarify there. And if somebody has had an issue there with an HOA, let me know what I need to do. Is there some threat I can make that would actually get a reasonable price? Because I'm willing to pay. I'm willing to say we lost it. But if you go much north of $25, I'm not really prepared to do it. Especially when you go three times that. I'm just not willing to do it.
Just say the next time you're at the swimming pool, you're actually going to jump in the water without a shirt on. That should do it.
That threat will get... All right, it's $10. Jeez, calm down. All right, speaking of pools, let's jump right in with some Longhorn football stuff as well as college football stuff. We wish we could give you the big report and announcement from the Big 12 that happened this morning, but they didn't take my advice. I said get something ready for 9 a.m. They didn't. Trey, they're still leaning towards, I believe, a Monday evening discussion, voting, whatever. Maybe by the time we go to bed tonight, we'll find something out. Maybe during the triple option this afternoon, as people are in their afternoon drive situation, maybe we find out.
Probably not.
It's more like nighttime and before everybody goes to bed, before the end of the West Coast baseball games, we might actually know.
Yeah, it'll be a midnight news dump, Chad. No, supposedly at some point today, Big 12 decision makers are going to discuss several different options. And if you believe the reports that were coming out this weekend, the least likely of those options is the conference-only model. So at that point, it becomes either a plus one or something that was also suggested this weekend, which shocked the hell out of me, that them not really giving much in the way of direction to each individual team, to let each program decide how many games they want to try and play this year.
What?
So if they want to hold on to the 12, hold on to the 12. You want to scale it back by a game or two in the non-conference, you do that. You be you.
You're saying if Kansas determines they want to play 12 and Oklahoma says, now we're good with 10, the Big 12 will let that happen?
That was the report this weekend.
That is not smart.
Big 12 going the you be you model for this upcoming college football season.
I don't think that's how conferences work.
I don't think it is either.
I really don't.
And I'll be honest, I'm already disillusioned to what the Big 12 is. Bob Bowlesby, as the commissioner of this conference, just has me wishing Texas would find a way out and go someplace else. And I know that there are good fits and bad fits for them in terms of going to another Power 5 scenario, but just watching how they have dealt with this over the last month plus now has me that much more frustrated with just how god-awful this conference is, how big of a dumpster fire it is, Chad.
I wonder if they have had any conversations with the ACC, like we talked about on Friday, since the SEC kind of screwed the ACC over on a couple games. Is there any willingness to have those talks? And then you're looking around for what are the other conferences? What are your other options? If you want to go small, you've got a conference like the Southland that needs some games. If you want to go a little bigger than that, you've got conferences like Conference USA and AAC that have schools in the state of Texas. I'm thinking now for Longhorns, Horned Frogs, Red Raiders, and Bears, that they've got teams like UTSA and North Texas and others that have lost games that might be willing to, but not might, that will be willing to take a phone call. It's just, are you willing to play them? So then the other thing, and look, think about this difference. Today we are 54 days away from the Pac-12 start now and the SEC start, same day. But we're only 26 days away from when Oklahoma is supposed to play their first game. That's a full four-week difference, 28-day difference there. So, Trey, the question will be for Lincoln Riley, the Big 12, and the TV partners, are you guys good with Oklahoma playing Missouri State on August 29th? Or do we need to move that game? Or do you need to see them play somebody more important? And if we can't find somebody more important, do we not play at all? Like, what's the answer?
I know what the Big 12's thinking is if they allow Oklahoma and Kansas to play those games in week zero. Their thinking is, oh, we're the only dog on television those weeks. Yeah, let's take advantage of this right now. That is very short-sighted if that is their rationale. You need to take your cue from what these other major conferences are doing, and one, delay the start of the season, and two, consider going conference only. And on Friday, I started to gain some clarity as you and I were talking about the possibility of adding BYU to the conference for just this one season to try and up the overall number of conference games from 9 to 10 to get to that double digit figure. But I thought about it over the weekend, Chad, and actually I realized this in the moment. You don't need BYU this year. All BYU is adding one more school that you're having to split TV revenue up with everybody else who's already in the conference. So rather than do that, I came up with a plan this weekend. I actually tweeted the Big 12 my plan in hopes that they may consider doing something rational versus the chicken with its head cut off situation that we now find ourselves in.
All right.
And my idea is this. Conference only, everybody plays everybody, like what happens every year with the Big 12, so that's 9 games.
Yep.
At the end of the regular season, the top 8 teams by winning percentage play in an 8-team conference tourney, 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, and on down. The first two rounds are at the better seeds home field, with the championship game occurring in Jerry World. And you can move the conference championship game back to when the SEC and Pac-12 are holding their conference championship games?
19th of December.
19th of December. Mm-hmm. So you can move it back by a couple of weeks. Is this a perfect plan? No. But your top two teams end up playing 12 games, and you keep all of the TV money in conference. And while that's maybe selfish thinking right now, and it leaves some of these lesser schools and conferences a little bit in the lurch, I'm sorry, that's where we are right now. And there was a story in Sports Illustrated over the weekend that the Power Five conferences are considering breaking away from the NCAA this fall to host their own championships. And so if that happens and you're the Big 12, you mean to tell me that you're going to be wasting your time with Southland Conference teams and AAC teams when you can kind of band together as a conference for the first time in forever to actually do something that benefits everybody while also trying to get in line with what the rest of the Power Fives are doing?
To me, if the Big 12 is paying attention, I know it's a huge way to start a sentence.
Yeah.
But if you're paying attention, the other four have clearly stated it. Even though we don't have scheduling yet for Big 10, SEC, and ACC, they've all said conference only, except for that ACC. But the most you're going to have is one game outside of conference for 14 ACC teams. That is the most you're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm the Big 12, I kind of like your idea because it does what everybody else is doing, which is focus inward. Because based on, you know, eyeball tests and apples to apples, they're still going to have the college football playoff system and have a committee look at it. When a committee looks at a team like Oklahoma, do you want them seeing Big 12 games and then a Big 12 tournament at the end like you're talking about, or maybe a double up with one Big 12 team? Or do you actually want to see, do you want them to see Oklahoma playing Missouri State, whereas these other teams don't? Now, I could argue maybe that beating Missouri State 59-10 might do something mentally to a committee member, because we all know margin of victory matters even though they say it doesn't. That's one argument you could make, but the other one would be keep it in conference because everybody else is doing that too, and it gives a fair comparison across the board instead of having to do the math of, well, wait a second, that team played UTSA that weekend, or, yeah, but they played North Texas, and this team, you know, and this group in the SEC played Vanderbilt that week. Like, how do we weigh that out?
And how much more does a TV network value the possibility of a Big 12 quarterfinals or semifinal game than they do Oklahoma, Missouri State?
Dude, I like that idea. I really do. I mean, seeing you laid it out, I just kind of scrawled it out, and you're right. Three extra games for two teams. So two of your teams would end up playing 12.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now in college football, we have it where if your team gets to the conference title game, they get an extra. And then obviously going to a bowl game, you get another extra game. So we're used to that at the end. I don't think it's a bad idea at all. Now they need to...
And by the way, the teams at the bottom of the conference, too, they're going to be okay with their season ending a little bit prematurely after nine games. Yeah. Kansas and maybe Texas Tech or Baylor, whoever else is at the bottom of the conference this year, they will be fine with the season ending because it's going to be a tumultuous season even without or with a limited number of non-conference games.
Plus, it could just be fun. I mean, the idea of a 4-5 matchup towards the end of the season, the idea that if you're the fourth team or the sixth team or even the eighth team in the conference, you can literally win the conference title.
Like,
You could have won no conference game. Well, not none. You'd be the eighth best team out of 10, right? You kick two out ultimately. But you're the eighth best team in the conference. You didn't have the season you wanted, whatever, but you still would technically have a shot. I like it. I like that idea. So maybe it's tonight. We hope it's tonight with the Big 12 to let everybody know what they want to do. The other thing, Trey, that we'll definitely hit on today is Texas letting everybody know what they want to do when it comes to DKR and fans. So we've talked about the different stages of this. This is now Chris Del Conte and the interim president Hartzell laying out the messaging. It's on TexasSports.com is where I'm seeing it. But they've laid out a lot of different things here, and the basics are there in terms of you know, the social distancing and masks and all of that. But they do get specific about certain things and you know, the clear bag policies and all these. The first thing that jumps out to me, Trey, is that they did not outlaw tailgating. Before you even get to the stadium, They didn't outlaw tailgating. They're laying out parameters for how you can still tailgate. Now, would I still tailgate? No, I would not. But I wasn't raised as a tailgater. There are people that are listening right now whose families have been tailgating at DKR for, you know, 50 years. And they're going to tailgate if they can tailgate. I'm telling them today, they can tailgate, according to UT. It was going to be tough to stop it. Now they're just trying to figure out a way to make it as safe as possible. We'll see if it works.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I'm guessing that they aren't trying to ban tailgating altogether like Ohio State did is because they only have so much control over the spaces where tailgating happens. So they can control the parking lots that are actually on campus, but when you get across MLK, all of a sudden that becomes local or state jurisdiction.
Yeah.
With the parking garages or the spots where people are usually setting things up. And I think that's part of the reason why we see the very first sentence of them laying out the expectations with tailgating is that you must adhere to local and state COVID-19 safety requirements in place at the time of the tailgate, because they don't really have much say-so when it's all said and done once you get beyond MLK.
So the tailgating thing still could possibly happen. And then the big question we've been asking, Trey, is what are they going to require when it comes to face masks inside DKR? And we had thought the whole time it was going to be, all right, you know, in and out of the stadium, common areas, restrooms and stuff. But then when you're seated, that's going to be the big question. Are you going to ask them to wear it the whole game, or are you just going to say, hey, once you get to your seat, we'll do it like NASCAR did it, which is to say, hey, you don't necessarily have to wear your mask.
I've said in the last 2 weeks that my expectation is now that you will have to wear the face mask when you're at your seat as well, unless you're eating or drinking something.
But what Texas Sports says is this: all fans and staff will be required to wear a face covering that covers the nose and mouth completely. Face coverings are not a substitute for social distancing, and fans are asked to keep a safe distance between their party and other fans while inside and outside of DKR Texas Memorial Stadium. That's it.
Well, that's a little bit vague.
They are vague. So if I go get nachos and a beer and I come back to my seat, are you saying I need to eat and drink as efficiently as possible and then I need to put my mask back on? Or are you saying once I sit down 20 minutes before kick, I don't have to put my mask back on until I leave?
Let's look at some of the other areas that are covered in this email and then also a posting at texassports.com, because this is literally two sick sentences for face coverings, which is a pretty important topic here. We look at merchandise. There's 10 bullet points for merchandise, Chad. We look at the mobile app. There's 4 bullet points for the mobile app, as well as a long paragraph leading into those 4 bullet points. Social distancing markers and signage, a little bit less there. Suite operations. Oh my goodness, it looks like there's 10 to 15 bullet points for suite operations,
yeah,
including specifically covering when you should be wearing face masks, strongly suggesting wearing them when you're not eating or drinking something. I don't understand why they felt it necessary to be vague with the face covering requirement right now. Is it because they haven't really decided altogether what they're going to do about the face coverings?
I know. That's a very clear thing. Required to wear it upon entering the stadium and in all common areas. Strongly encouraged to wear a face covering inside the suites while not eating or drinking. It's pretty clear. But of course, Trey, we're talking about a school that, like many others until recently, and some schools still don't do it, but until recently, Texas was one of those schools that treated the people in the suites and the people outside very differently when it came to alcohol. And they didn't trust the outside folks to be able to drink alcohol like adults. So they are treating them differently here too, but in a weird way. Like, you're giving specific directions to Matthew McConaughey on how he's supposed to wear his mask and not wear his mask, but generic dude 5 rows from the top of DKR in a socially distanced situation where he chose to opt in and blah, blah, blah. You're not telling him or her what they're required. All they know is they're required to wear it coming into the stadium. It's got to cover their nose and mouth, but that's really all you're telling them.
We have rolled this out like T-sips, Chad. I'm not embarrassed to admit that. This is not a good look for us. The other thing that I am a little bit confused about is that they cover tickets for 2020 games, and they list what it takes in terms of the total annual gift to the Longhorn Foundation, how many tickets you are allowed. I'm assuming per game, if you give more than $75,000 a year, you get 12 total tickets per game. 50 to 9,999 is four total tickets per game. The way this reads is going against what Hartzell had said last week about UT not allowing more than 20,000 people in the stadium.
Yeah, they're saying Texas Athletics will make every effort to keep season ticket holders as close to their 19 season tickets as possible. A rep will reach out in August, and that's for those that have opted in. Maybe they've had enough opt-in and out that they actually know they can pull it off?
I wish they would let us know that. I wish they would clarify that, because there are some confusing things here that were released today on this.
Very confusing. All right, so Texas trying to standardize some things and get information out on what will happen at DKR. The Big 12 hopefully will be deciding what they should do tonight. And we ask you again, if you're a Longhorn fan, Sooner fan, or anybody in the Big 12, what do you want this conference to do? You want to go conference only, or would you like to see a couple non-conference games? Because the options for non-conference are obviously dwindling or not there at all. Up next, let's get into a little bit of baseball, the update on the Cardinals, the Marlins, and if baseball gets to continue going after the last week or so. Plus, we got more football stuff to get into involving SEC players and their communication with their conference, and Pac-12 players and their communication with their conference and the NCAA. A lot going on a Monday. We hope you are having a good start to your week. It's going to be super hot out there again, over 100 degrees, so stay hydrated and keep it right here on the Horn.
When I was a kid, I thought I'd save the world. Running around and chasing all the criminals. Swinging on a web, flying in the sky. Shooting lasers from my eyes. But now I know it never was my destiny. It's not my place in life, not who I'm meant to be. And I don't want the glory, I don't want the fame. And I don't want to wear this cape. 'Cause on the inside, I know it won't last. On the inside, I'm an outcast.
As a superhero nerd, I'm in. What is this, Trey?
This is new Weezer, Chad.
And really?
I have to admit, this is one of the catchier Weezer songs that I've heard in a long, long time.
That's Weezer?
Yeah.
Wow. I told you, I love that guy's voice. And I wouldn't have recognized it as him, though. Didn't quite sound like him. This is a new album for them?
Not a new album just yet. There's just one track that they did with guitar, but this is the piano version. It's called Hero.
Hero. Very nice. All right. So what are you doing? You going with Weezer today, or are you just going with some new stuff?
No, it is New Music Friday on a Monday. Okay. It does include, of course, Weezer, as well as Heartless Bastards. We have some new Billie Eilish and Angel Olsen and Marilyn Manson, and it does not sound like Marilyn Manson either, so stay
tuned
for all of that.
Very cool. Also interested to hear what the new Billie Eilish sounds like. All right, thank you for those that have jumped in already on the Specs text line. 337-3776. Before we get into some baseball discussion, people are reacting to this football discussion, so let's get it out there. This text says, as an OU fan, our redshirt freshman quarterback could use a warm-up game against Missouri State. That being said, you have to stay within the conference guidelines with rules, and it will only complicate game days. Everyone being on the same page is the only way we get a football season without cancellations. Somebody else says 9 games, then seed them and play a plus one. Then play is an interesting idea. Play a red shirt only game with players that will take a red shirt and then play a championship. Somebody else says, I like Trey's plan. Stay within your conference. Do a top 8 tournament. I like the idea. Somebody else suggests that drive-in tailgating is going to be the next step in college football and says, good luck tailgating with less than 10 people. So there you go.
Yeah, less than 10 people. And how comfortable are you going to be just showing up to a random tailgate? Now, there will be some people that won't have any issues with that, but those are probably also the people that are refusing to wear masks in a grocery store and things like that.
Yeah.
For everybody else, though, I mean, if I end up going to a game this year, Chad, there's a good chance that unless I have some sort of pregame responsibilities with the radio station, I am parking and walking straight into the stadium to my seats like an hour to 30 minutes before the game starts.
Yeah, that tailgating thing is going to be tough. I mean, the whole point of for me at least, the whole point of tailgating is going to check out people's tailgates, chill out with them, find out about them and their group and their family and how long they've been doing it. And I just like to talk way too much. I need to stay away from tailgates for this football season, because until it can be the way I love doing it, I don't know that I'm going to be dealing with tailgates. But that's a great point, you know, and to try to – they're trying to figure out a way to do it. And hopefully, you know, people will do it as safely as they feel like they can. Somebody else was asking the question about your idea on the tournament. I think it's got an easy answer. They're saying, well, what if you have two teams that, like, tie for third or fourth place? Well, they played each other.
Exactly.
So, it's easy, right?
It's not totally foolproof because, obviously, there are three-way ties. But it will work itself out and it'll be okay, even if it means a coin flip to see which team gets the four through six, let's say. So yeah. One of those teams does get home field in the first round, the other two don't, so it is a big deal, but I think that scenario is pretty slim, and you do have the built-in, if the two teams tie, which team beat the other.
Yeah, and you could also do those rules like the SEC and others had a few years ago, where if everybody's ranked, the two highest ranked teams among those three use the head-to-head there. And that team gets the highest seed, then the next one. And you can figure it out. You can figure all that out. I like your idea there. A lot of college football ideas being thrown out. We'll get to the SEC stuff and the Pac-12 stuff. I should have reorganized that. The Pac-12 stuff, I think, is what a lot of people are talking about today. I'll break down a little more of what they did schedule-wise in the crap bag. I think that might tell us about what the other conferences might be thinking or could be thinking. And then, of course, this Pac-12 players letter is getting a lot of love, too. The other thing over the weekend, let's be honest, we went into the weekend with some folks asking, can Rob Manfred let baseball continue to roll? Or is he about to have to hit a moment where he might have to just stop it all?
Dude, how about the 180s that guy's having to do on a daily basis? Saying that if we don't get a better handle on this, we're just going to go ahead and cancel the season, and then having to walk that back a day later, saying we're doing everything in our power to not give up on the season. I'm not a quitter. I'm Rob Manfred. It's like, dude, just get a handle on your guys who are clearly not respecting the rules enough.
Yeah, they've got to get it figured out as to what is happening now. Since, I think, past a certain point, they're not seeing... they think they may have gotten the Marlins thing controlled to a certain degree, but I'm not seeing the Marlins playing a game till Friday. I'm seeing games postponed like all the way through Thursday.
It's weird because you and I had both seen that they were resuming action on Tuesday. I saw that this weekend. You did as well, but the schedule suggests otherwise.
And then St. Louis is scheduled to play tomorrow at Detroit. They're going to try to do four games in 2 days, like maybe two doubleheaders, I think, where they're already putting the Cardinals back out there.
And thankfully they canceled that weekend series. And I have to give you some credit, Chad. You tried to talk some sense into me. You asked me my percentages that St. Louis actually played that Saturday night game or the doubleheader over the weekend. And I foolishly said 15%. You're like, really? You think it's that high? Should have said 0%. That was the right answer. And sure enough, you were on that one.
So they did shut that down, but they're going to try to get the Cardinals going again. And then for some reason, I'm seeing this week the Yankees and Orioles have two games postponed on Wednesday and Thursday. Maybe that's because they're the games that got moved to earlier?
I don't know.
I'm a little confused as to why that is the case. But baseball, they trudge on. They head on. There's a lot of their teams, if you think about it, a lot of the teams that have not gone through this, they've had, you could argue, three teams, one big-time team has a problem or had a problem, and that's the Marlins.
Mm-hmm.
You had a little bit with the Cardinals. You had the Phillies get affected with a couple of staff members.
Well, and the Cardinals' problem is growing, too. There was a report this morning saying that they expected more positive tests. So we may see the Cardinals end up losing more than a week to their season, like what happened with Miami.
The other thing I believe is true is they've done testing on the Cardinals at the end of the weekend that they'll get the test back today. And they're scheduled to play tomorrow.
And I think those are the tests that they're expecting more positive results, because I think some of the people who are tested started to exhibit symptoms after they got tested.
So they've got to figure out what's that number beyond which we have to say, you know what, we got to tell the Tigers we can't play.
Wait a second. When did they test these guys? On Friday?
No, I think there's a one-day test. I think they tested them yesterday.
So they tested them yesterday.
With the idea of, let's find out the test today, the results, and then hopefully we want to try to play tomorrow.
I hope under normal circumstances the turnaround for those tests is quicker than a day. I was always under the assumption that they had the ability to get a lot of these tests back same day. within a couple of hours.
My understanding is that baseball, at least, I don't know if it's the whole league or at least some baseball teams, have the same test, this rapid nasal swab test that we've been talking about here on the station that Total Men's has. You go to TotalMens.com, find out more information, but that's a 15-minute turnaround from what I understand.
Yeah.
Instead of waiting 10 days or whatever. So they're trying to figure all that out. By the way, Astros took 2 out of 3 over the weekend from the Angels. Rangers dropped 2 out of 3 in San Francisco, and they both stay out west. Tomorrow, Houston's at Arizona. Tomorrow, the Rangers are at Oakland. Rangers in third place in the early going of the season, and the Astros, no shock, are in first.
God, the Rangers are so bad. The Rangers are so bad.
They're not good at the little stuff, man.
Still fun to watch Joey Gallo, though, Chad.
Oh, yeah. No, he's great.
You got that silver lining. But even Mike Minor is not pitching like he was last year. And I won't say he was pitching over his head last year because he's been a solid acquisition for them for a couple of years now. But he is one of those starters who is struggling trying to get things going in what would be the middle of the season. Lance Lynn has been better, but after those two guys, they're just really struggling with options as starters ever since Corey Kluber went down with that shoulder injury.
One quick question before we hit the break here. If you're a college football coach, how do you look at what baseball's going through with the Marlins and other situations and not think to yourselves, how the hell are we going to control all our guys? How the hell are we going to stop our 80 or 85 guys from going to a party?
Well, interestingly enough, the SEC and Greg Sankey had a private phone call where they addressed some of these things, and the word has gotten out on that now to where we understand that these conferences aren't as aloof as some may believe that they are. And some people were upset about it. But at the same time, I don't fault anybody for laying out the reality of what lies ahead if you do choose to try and play your sport over the next 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, the SEC was being as truthful as they could with their players over the weekend, while the Pac-12's football players are trying to be as realistic as they can with their conference and the NCAA about what they're seeing and what they're feeling as we're getting closer to the season. We'll get into all of that at 1 o'clock. Plus, as Trey talked about, this Power 5 versus the NCAA discussion has cranked back up as everybody's trying to figure out what to do in 2020. Up next, though, let's talk a little crap bag. I'll go into the Pac-12 scheduling. What games did they move, and what games did they leave alone? And what could that tell us about Big 12, SEC, and Big 10 once they decide to reset? Plus, who bought the XFL before it hit the auction? Well, it kind of matters. This is The Horn.
Where you going, my friend? Have you forgotten when? There was a time filled with hope instead of fear that's in your heart. There was a time when life was simple and innocent to start. Do you remember?
New music on a Monday. It all came out on Friday. What do you got, Trey?
Anybody who is really familiar with Austin music from the last 10 years or so would recognize this voice as the dulcet tones from Erica Winterstrom. She is the lead singer of the Heartless Bastards, and they have a new single out called Revolution. And Chad, having listened to this entire thing, this is a beautiful crescendo. We're only going to play part of it, but it continues to pick up the pace throughout the course of the 6:16 that the song spans.
That's a woman singing?
It is.
It's fascinating.
She has one of my favorite voices in music.
It's a really cool voice. I just thought, I did not think it was a woman as she was singing, but that's an interesting. Heartless Bastards with new music as well. All right, let's jump on into the crab bag here. We'll talk some Pac-12 scheduling.
Chad's crab bag.
Crab bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
We will also get to some of your texts coming in. Lots of good stuff on the text line, 337-3776. Real quick look at what the Pac-12 did. I decided to look at how many games did they leave alone and how many games did they completely change. I was shocked to find out how many games the Pac-12 actually left alone. There are 12 teams in that conference. 10 games apiece, we can all do the math. That's 120 football games. Out of 120, you know how many games they left on the same day between the same two teams? Two. That's a lot of rescheduling that had to be done. They left the Apple Cup where it was on November 28th.
Which is interesting because they put a lot of those rivalry games at the front part of the season to make sure that they get played.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We'll get to the games they moved to, which I think that is going to be really important, maybe for other conferences. Colorado, Oregon changed locations, but the two teams are still playing at the same time. And then Colorado, Arizona, they moved to a different day. But everything else is different.
Was Colorado-Oregon supposed to happen in Denver or something, and now it's going to happen in Boulder?
No, it was supposed to be at Colorado, now it's at Oregon. They totally moved. They just moved. The same day, they just switched it.
Well, that's weird.
For some reason, I guess because of all the other scheduling that has to happen, and you got to add two games, and you can't just willy-nilly add two games. You got to be fair about it, right? You got to add a home and a road for everybody. So the other thing they did was Washington State is now the only Pac-12 big-time rival game that everybody would think of that is in the last five games of the year. They moved the other four that we would all think of to the first five games. Arizona State, Cal Stanford, the Civil War, Oregon State, and USC-UCLA.
Can't say Civil War anymore, Chad.
Yeah, sure I can. And the first, so those have been moved to the first five games of the year, and that's why I started thinking about it. Is that because of TV revenue? Is that because they think it may get shut down and they just want to get that game out there? Or are they just trying to welcome the fans back with, hey, we're going to go with a big-time game right away? I mean, are they trying to get them in there because they know the train could come off the tracks after that?
Personally, that's my belief, is that they want to make sure those games happen for history's sake. Because this matchup has been going on since 1925 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure that they squeeze those in because there is always the possibility that you have to cancel the season halfway through.
Yeah. So to translate that, Trey, to the Big 12, if the Big 12 wants to just pick up on September 26th and go exactly like they've got it scheduled, it might not be a bad move because that would put Texas and Oklahoma and Bedlam in their first 5 weeks.
That's right, because they moved Bedlam up this year to avoid the possibility of OU and Oklahoma State playing back-to-back weekends.
And with all due respect to whatever people think Kansas and Kansas State is in football, the Big 12 only has, in my estimation, those two big rival games to worry about. There's nothing else they do that is one that really has any vibe around the country. I mean, yeah, Tech and Baylor play every year, but okay. Baylor TCU or whatever it is.
Yeah, I'd argue Baylor TCU over Baylor Texas Tech with either of those schools, but you're right. Yeah. It doesn't have national luster.
For a 2 or 3 year window, Baylor TCU was badass. Like, that was a hell of a run. When Art had it going at Baylor and those matchups with TCU, that was can't miss television for me.
And those two teams still hate one another, but it's not the high scoring affairs right that we were seeing for that 2 to 3 year stretch.
So I'm just wondering now, looking at this. So the Pac-12, what I'm telling you is, if you have a Dave Campbell, or Dave Campbell wouldn't cover the Pac-12, but Phil Steele or whatever it is, like, there's basically nothing that's in your magazine now that's real in terms of schedules. It's just been ripped apart and completely changed.
Well, and with opt-outs and guys who may or may not be playing too based on, I mean, it's just such a mess.
So what will the Big 12 do in terms, even if they have non-conference, what will the conference stuff look like? For the ACC, what do you do? Do you rearrange some things and put some of your, you know, rival games early? What will we see the SEC do? You still going to save the Iron Bowl for later? You still going to save the cocktail party for kind of the middle? You going to move something like that up? I'm fascinated now by watching it. The Pac-12, to me, the easiest thing would have been just to kind of leave a lot of your structure in place, but that is not what they did at all. They've had to install, they had to throw games into bye weeks. They had to create new bye weeks and adjust on the fly. So as we get ready for this decision, maybe this decision tonight, Trey, or maybe it's just a discussion in the Big 12 tonight. But
if they don't announce something after they talk tonight, Chad, just go ahead and abolish the conference this year. Cancel the football season. I'm serious about this. Well, and I know you're on board with them taking their time. yes, you can take your time, but at the same time, the clock is ticking on that week zero matchup, or those two week zero matchups.
Right, you're 26 days away from Oklahoma and Kansas supposedly playing a game. You must respect your best coach and at least a somewhat well-known coach in Les Miles and let them know what's going on. Absolutely by the end of this week, when I think some teams are supposed to start practice, you got to let them know. But technically, Trey, today things change for a lot of teams. Today is like first walkthroughs and first technical practices, I think, for some teams in that conference. So you might want to figure that out ahead of time. So tonight, the Big 12 hopefully will let us know kind of what they are thinking. Another thing I want to mention real quick, there's the XFL situation was dead and gone, laying on the table, ready for the mortician. And now the paddles might have hit the chest. A lot of people thought it was going to be Vince McMahon. Here's another guy, though, that I would have thrown on the list. It's The Rock. Dwayne Johnson is the biggest movie star on earth right now, you could argue. He's got a lot of swag. He's got a lot of stroke. He's got a lot of connections. And apparently he knows a guy named Jerry Cardinale that runs something called Red Bird Capital. And he's in a group now that has purchased the XFL before it went to the bankruptcy auction. So a little bit of it's gone from a to a boop. That's about all I can give it right now.
And but for people who didn't understand why Chad was beeping into the microphone, he was also doing the heart rate monitor at the same time.
Yes, I was doing
with his finger.
That's true. Thank you. That helped. The pantomime part of it was was really important. So that is out there as well. Couple of quick texts before we hit the end of the hour. Somebody says football has to approach it like the NBA. The MLB model isn't working. I don't think a bubble can work for football. I don't think they're going to be able to put it together. This says it's not the guys are going to go to a party. It's them going to class. If they go to class, maybe. This says the Cardinals test came back 100% positive for D-bags. Sincerely, Astros fans. Okay, there you go. That's good. We need to, kind of even that out. Astros fans are getting joked on enough right now. This says, that was the last one.
This one also says, Trey's throwing a fit like a child when talking about the Big 12. No, I'm not. I'm a frustrated fan who is watching my conference bungle this time and time again. You've had every opportunity to figure something out to this point, and based on every report from the weekend, you have no idea what you're going to do. You had scheduled a virtual media day for your head coaches to speak with media from across the conference today prior to you actually meeting to discuss what you were going to do with your schedule. That's how out of sorts they are with all of this right now. So you can call me a child throwing a fit right now if you want to. I am a frustrated fan who wants my team and every other team in this conference to have a plan in place that ensures that we get to play some semblance of a 2020 season, period.
I just wonder if the ACC and or SEC hadn't made their decisions last week, would they still be going with the media days today?
They probably would. That's the sad thing. You're right about that.
Would Tom Herman have been on like a Zoom call with Jeff Howe and the whole crew, Brian Davis of the Statesman and Kirk Bowles and all those people covering everything, the Orange Bloods folks and 24/7 folks and everybody, and they're all having to ask just insane questions about, we have no idea if you're playing LSU or if you let the SEC make the choice and they still go, so it looks like you're not playing LSU. Like, what do we do now? Thankfully, they didn't go to that degree. Hopefully, we hear something tonight. Fans are jumping in on what they'd like to see. So if you're a Texas fan or a Big 12 fan, let us know. We also have a long text I'll read here in a second that starts with, all this is for naught. From Tom, a fan of the show, but also our Emily Wolf fan, that texts in from time to time. We'll let you know what he's thinking there because I think it's a good text, and I know a lot of people kind of have that thought process. Also up next, the Pac-12 players' letter, what that could mean, what the SEC said to its players, its player leadership on a Zoom call or conference call over the weekend that might matter, and is the Power Five ready to break away from the NCAA? We'll get to all of it on the horn.